This series presents information based in part on theory and conjecture. The producer's purpose is to suggest some possible explanations, but not necessarily the only ones, to the mysteries we will examine.
Good evening and welcome to this week's episode of the Paranormal Pulse. I'm Chris Bruno, my co-host Lance Phillip, and this is episode 16, am I correct?
That is it, 16.
Yay, episode 16. Thank you so much for hanging out with us and spending time with us every episode. And if this is your first time here and listening to the Paranormal Pulse, I think you're going to be excited to find out that is not just about ghost hunting or going and exploring old cemeteries, although we really like doing that. It's also about UFOs. It's also about Bigfoot. It's about anything that is abnormal or paranormal. So this week, Lance is going to tell us what we've got lined up for tonight's episode.
Well, first we're going to start off. Both of us were recently on vacation. In between taping the last steps on this one, we both went on vacation. So we'll touch on that a little bit, where both of us were and that sort of thing. But on July, I want to say it is the 7th, if I have my date correctly.
Mm-hmm. Sunday.
Sunday.
It was a Sunday.
Yep. It was the 66th anniversary of the Roswell UFO incident. Mm-hmm. So I thought about it, and I think now would be a good time to do a UFO episode.
I think it's a great idea. It's definitely relevant, and there's a lot out there that we get to talk about as far as the anniversary and UFOs in general.
Absolutely. And, you know, with Roswell being the most famous incident as far as UFO sighting and, you know, the whole incident, we also are going to talk about 1975 Travis Walton alien abduction, which is the most famous alien abduction case in history.
We'll talk about all of that. We're going to talk about vacations first, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't want to give too much detail on all the great stuff because we have so much to talk about.
Absolutely.
So as far as vacation is concerned, Lance, we talked about your vacation just a little bit in the last episode, episode 15, that you and some other members at EKG, that's East Coast Ghost, went and visited Gettysburg for their 150th anniversary of the battle. Tell me what happened. We didn't talk about this yet. I'm anxious to hear how your trip was.
It was a great trip. We had a fun time. It was myself, Jen, and Rick. We all went down for the 150th anniversary and commemoration of the Battle of Gettysburg. And we saw the three-day reenactment, which was the first reenactment. They did two reenactments, one on the first weekend, one on the second weekend.
Right.
And we were there for the first. It was fantastic. I mean, they estimated that there were over 1 million people in Gettysburg. And Gettysburg's a small town. We had to actually get the rooms a year in advance. But, you know, not to make it a long story, but the reenactment, you could not believe how big this was.
I saw some of your pictures, and they were incredibly impressive. And that was just while you were down there and Facebooking them, because we're Facebook friends. But yeah. I can't imagine being there in person.
Well, it was just something I've never seen on that big a scale. Like, I was at, years ago when I was a kid, I was at Fort Ticonderoga in upstate New York when they did a reenactment there, which was a reenactment of stuff from the French and Indian War. And that was pretty large, but there were only probably on that one, you know, maybe 200 or 300 reenactors, okay?
Okay.
This was giant. Reports were that there were 20,000 reenactors.
Wow.
They were
20,000?
20,000 reenactors reenacting this battle.
That's obscene. That's crazy.
You could not believe the scale. Literally a couple, it was probably, I don't know how many, I mean, it was probably, I want to say maybe 100 cannons there reenacting. All kinds of reenactors on horses reenacting the cavalry battles. It was incredible. I mean, the sheer volume, of men on both sides going back and forth reenacting these battles. And what they did was they followed the events in the order that they happened. They followed the events from the first day. Then on the second day, they redid the events, from the second day into the third day. Ending with Pickett's Charge, which was amazing because that had all the reenactors. That was the final day where they all came together at once. And you just couldn't believe, like, when the first set of troops show up, and then the reinforcements show up behind them, it just was fantastic to watch.
That's so cool.
And we were lucky enough to get very close. As some of the pictures I put up on Facebook, we were right there. And I've done some of the best photography of my life at that event. So
they were really, what I did see, and I'm sure it's just a smidgen of what really you have. What I did see was really cool. So
yeah, I mean, I probably took close to 1,000 photos, and I was, it was really funny because Rick was kind of laughing at me, and so was Jen, because I had my still camera in one hand and video camera in the other. I was videotaping so much of the events because I'm going to put together at some point for me and and Rick, we're going to put together a little DVD, not for sale or anything, just for us to watch, because we lived it firsthand. We want to be able to rewatch it, so it was fantastic. And some of the video I have is amazing. So again, we were lucky enough to get right up there. And the event wasn't as organized for the spectators as it was for the reenactors.
Okay.
There were some problems with where they had set us up a few times and whatnot, but we wound up getting through that and really getting up close. Like Rick was really funny about it, because he was, first couple times we started back, and I wound up going right through the crowd, making my way to the front. And
of course. Your old concert days came out, right?
That's exactly what Rick was talking about. He goes,
you got to push towards the front of the line, to the front stage.
Absolutely.
You get good at that.
It was just, you just can't believe the magnitude of an event like that, And then we were talking, there were reenactors who were there for the first time. There were reenactors who were old pros at this,
Yeah.
And besides the reenactors, you get the families of the reenactors on the sidelines. And they're telling you about, it was such a great family event, because you had moms telling us how they stitched up the jackets for their kids and how they made a lot of the clothes themselves. And, and you had young kids who started out like when they were 16 and, guys now in their 30s who had been doing it for years. And then you had these young kids who were finally of age where they can do it. And it was really fun to see. I mean, it was just great,
That's cool. And it looked, like I said, the pictures were awesome, and I'm sure it was just such an experience. It's a 150-year anniversary.
Absolutely.
And you can't do that again. They were trying to make it big.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, like, it gives you, for anybody who's read about it, when you actually see it like that, it gives you a very different perspective as to what it was like than just reading about it or even watching movies,
Sure.
And then, of course, while we were down in Gettysburg, who doesn't do a little ghost hunting while we're there?
I would be so disappointed if you didn't.
Yeah, we didn't do a lot of it. We just.
I feel like, are you feeling okay, Lance?
Yeah, no. We honestly, it was so. I will say, it was exhausting, because it was in the high 90s, the temperature when we went.
No way.
And yeah, it was really bad. You were out in the sun, the whole time. In fact, on the second day, Jen got a little bit of heat exhaustion, and as well as Rick.
Yeah, that's not fun.
Both of them sunburned really bad. Me, I'm Italian. I just tanned.
You have to use. I'm Italian too, but you still should use sunblock.
Absolutely.
Sunblock. Mm-hmm. Trust me when I say this, especially from my vacation. Sunblock was essential every day.
Right. No, it was really cool though. But we did a little ghost hunting. We went back to Culp's Hill and got some more experiences there, like we had gotten the first time. But now Rick had seen it this time, so we knew we weren't crazy. Now we had a third person seeing the same sort of things we were seeing. And we went to Saks Covered Bridge, and as usual, Saks Covered Bridge had a million people ghost hunting on it. And
you really
couldn't get anything, that you wouldn't say was contaminated. But I did get one really interesting photo that was something I've never gotten before. So it was interesting. I don't know what it is, but it's interesting. But that's really, that was the extent of it. I mean, we had a great time, and we just spent the 3 days mainly with the reenactments.
That's very cool.
So now where did you go?
It's amazing. Well, that's why I was making fun of you with the heat and sunblock, because, I went to Arizona. And I went to go with my daughters. I have two daughters, and the girls and I went out to Arizona to visit my dad and his wife. And it was great. We had a good time. I've been out there a few times. I'm not a stranger to Arizona. I love it out there. And namely, the most beautiful thing about this is my dad lives in Sedona now, which is an awesome place to stay if you can swing it, all amongst the Red Rock and close to some really great towns. Like Jerome and Cottonwood, which are these old mining towns. So there's a lot of activity. You may have heard of Jerome, Arizona before from shows like Ghost Adventurers, where Zach and the gang were over at the Jerome Grand Hotel. I had been in there before they went out there, and then a couple of times since they've been out there. And they have some really interesting stuff that they had encountered while they were there, mostly in an outbuilding. The Drone Grand Hotel itself used to be a hospital that treated all the miners because it's in a copper ore mining town. Very cool town, Jerome. It's built on like the side of a mountain. So basically, if you go into the town, you're going up cantilever switchbacks or hairpin turns to get to the top of the town. And each street is built on the side of the mountain. So if you want to get to the next block over, it's not over, it's up. You have to go up steps to get to the next street. But it's totally worth the climb. And coolest thing is, if you start at the very top of the town in Jerome, you're starting up by the Jerome Grand Hotel. So anyway, back to that. It used to be a copper mining town. So the Jerome Grand Hotel used to be a hospital. And then it turned into either a full a mental hospital, or it was a partial mental hospital. And just so many miners dying, hundreds and thousands of deaths all the time. But apparently Ghost Adventures had a little bit more research in it. Of course, I'm just a tourist. And the outbuildings also had a lot of activity going on in them. So it's a cool place to visit if you're sensitive at all. You would love Jerome. You'd love Sedona, too. And it's just a really cool place to go into. I have some great pictures, old and new, that I can share. I'll put them up on the Paranormal Pulse podcast page on Facebook.
Great.
And that's just one of many places we went. Of course, Sedona has other paranormal activity for those of you out there who believe in the ley lines in the earth and vortexes. Sedona is very well known amongst those groups as almost a sacred place because ley lines cross in Sedona. And there's supposed to be one of the most famous large vortexes between Bell and Cathedral Rock, which I've been into in that area a number of times. But it's just a cool experience to see the red rock to begin with. And then if you're sensitive at all and you believe in that, you know, to feel the energy that's coming out of that area is just so cool. So it's something to experience for sure. My kids loved it too. I mean, I could go on and on and on about this, but Jerome in particular is the most interesting town to me because it has such a history of hauntings. You know, it has a place called the Haunted Hamburger. Awesome food. Always, always, always visit there when you go to Jerome. And the town used to be called Ghost City.
Oh,
and
really?
If that gives you any clue as to their history at all, it used to be called Ghost City. And there's I found in one of the little museum-y kind of store areas in the bottom of a building with a car inside it. So it's very funny how they got the car in there, but I'll show pictures of that. But I found out that they also had a hill race. If you were really into like race car driving and stuff, that was a hill race to get into. It was Ghost City Hill Climb. And they used to race up those cantilever roads up into Jerome. And they had curve signs and everything. It was like a road race. It was crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, really cool history in those towns. So if you like that stuff or you like any kind of, you know, sensitive things, Sedona, Jerome, Cottonwood, that whole area is just a really cool place to visit. And, you know, we were out there for seven days, including travel days. And so there's a lot more to talk about, but I'm not going to get into it right now. Unless if somebody wants to know more, hit us up, send us an email. Get us on Facebook with an IM or a comment or what have you, and we'll be happy to talk to you about that stuff. We have some other things to talk about. To get on topic, actually, we could be talking about the UFOs and the 66th anniversary, I can't talk tonight, of the Roswell UFO incident. We could talk about that when we come back. It's the Paranormal Pulse podcast.
Take a deep breath and relax as we check your Paranormal Pulse.
Welcome back, everybody. Well, this week, again, we're going to talk about the Roswell UFO incident that took place in 1947 on July 7th. There's a lot of different theories on it. Obviously, as we know, the basic story is that a UFO was supposedly crashed at Roswell. The initial,
right.
The initial reports that went out were that the U.S. government had captured, or the U.S. military had captured a UFO. Well, the next day, the story changed, and it became a weather balloon.
Right.
That
How amazing.
Well, yeah, and that story kind of stood quiet until 1978 when a physicist and UFOologist, Stan Friedman, interviewed Major Jesse Marcel, who was involved in the original recovery of the debris in 1947. And Marcel had expressed his belief that the military had covered up the recovery of a alien spacecraft. Well, a couple of things happened in this last week that we just had was, one, Google did a great Google Doodle.
I saw that. Yes. And I had a hard time playing it.
Well, yeah, and it was great. It was a little animation of the Roswell UFO, and you had a little alien, and you had to kind of maneuver him around the screen and pick up little clues to solve a puzzle that would rebuild his craft and get him flying and then continue the animation. It was really cool. We'll put up the link to that doodle. And there's also, if you don't feel like playing the game, right now we have a link to it on our Facebook page, which is the YouTube link of the whole video from start to finish.
Right.
So, I mean, mainstream media now is covering this. Besides that, I mean, the event has a lot of interesting history to it. There's been a lot of speculation over what really happened that day, because the story has changed over the years by the witnesses.
Right.
And whether it be that they've either expanded the story over what it originally was, or that over the years their memories have faded of what really happened. And to that point, recently, in fact, it was just on last night, Destination America, their show Unsolved Mysteries, featured the three most famous UFO sightings in history. But the main one that they featured was the Roswell UFO incident. And they did an experiment where they took a group of people out into the desert, and they had set up a fake crash site, and they had barricaded it with, you know, caution tape, and they had they had soldiers, you know, people playing the part of soldiers in there, and they supposedly had this guide, and they had set it up that these people were just going to go out on an expedition in the desert, like a walking trip with a guide.
Okay. And when
when they got there, okay, but what they did was they armed each person with a helmet cam, okay? So that way you could record, they were able to record the events as they were actually taking place. And then what they were going to do is bring the group back 2 months later to go over what they remember and see how accurate their memory was compared to what was actually seen.
Interesting.
And that was really interesting. So they had this psychologist who had set up the whole experiment. Again, they take this team out into the desert and they go around this crash site. And the guy tells them, I don't know what's going on here. He goes, he basically explains to him, it could be anything. There's some type of site here that the government doesn't really want us to see. That's why it's taped off, and they have guards. If we get too close, the guards are going to chase us away. And, of course, he brings them too close, and the guards come out. And, you know, the guards at some point a rifle at them, basically tell them they need to leave, this, that, the other thing.
Yeah.
You know, they go over the whole thing. And, the different individuals are looking at different things on that field. And, you know, when they bring them back, they separate them into two groups. And they interviewed one half of the group, then the second half of the group. And what they were finding is that people's memories really varied to actually what they saw. There was one woman who was saying, well, I saw this. But when they reviewed the tape, it wasn't possible for her to have seen that because her head never faced that direction. And and what it was is that amongst the group talking to each other, they gave each other subjective ideas, first of all. But also, too, over time, they started to introduce their own ideas. Like one guy speculating, he goes, I don't know, maybe it was a UFO site. Well, nobody had mentioned that at all at the time.
Right.
This guy just interjected his own theories into it. And that's what they were saying could have happened with the original Roswell incident from a skeptic's point of view, was that did it really happen the way a lot of these witnesses are saying, or did they, A, embellish, or were their memories just over time changing the story and adding to it as they added their own theories to it as opposed to what they, you know, actually saw?
Sure.
Or were they, you know, believing the hype themselves that they may have heard since that point and then adding it? There was one woman who had claimed that when they were in the field, now this, you know, with the test group, that she had seen one of the military people point the gun at her, and she had thrown one of the other guys in the way, using him as a shield.
Okay.
Sort of happened that way. what she didn't actually throw him over. What she did was she stepped to the left, basically, and put herself in, you know, him and her, you know, him in between the guard and herself. She didn't actually throw him as she had claimed, you know.
Very dramatic. Sounds good.
Right. But they don't, what the psychologists came to the conclusion was none of them were lying. She didn't believe any of them were lying or embellishing, just that their memories had changed the way the events actually were.
Right.
And that was only after 2 months. They're like, could you imagine after, you know,
years.
30 years, 40 years?
Sure.
So, but even keeping with that, you know, that does tie into what we do as paranormal investigators. That's why it's so crucial that you videotape things and you take really good notes, even while investigating. Because you can go back later on and what you think you saw isn't actually what you saw. Because you had already, you know, you've now become, your memory is changed a little bit by different events that could happen around you. So, and everybody, and we've all seen this, where people go on Facebook and they'll say, I know, I was there, I saw this, this, and this. But the reality is, you can't remember it all exactly the way it was. There's perceptions involved. And again, that experiment with the camera, you know, on, you know, that point of view camera that was attached to everyone's helmet was fantastic because it really showed that people do add a lot to the story. And they and they add details that they didn't necessarily see.
Right.
You know, which is fantastic.
And it's true. And that happens in it, everyday happenings. There's a show called Brain Games that did a whole thing on perception and people's perception and how it changes after not only time, but if you're distracted by something else, your perception of an event can be completely jaded from what it really should be. So it's amazing. You know, it's always cool to see those experiments. I wanted to just interject with something really fun real quick.
Sure.
I posted on Facebook while we're recording here that if anybody had questions about UFOs, to post them on our status and let us know. We, you know, obviously can throw them in here into our podcast. And how fun, my friend Jen G asked if will tinfoil hats help?
I don't know about that. You know, only.
I just thought it was a nice light little note as we transition to our next UFO issue.
You know, there's a cartoon on Cartoon Network on Adult Swim, and for the life of me, I'm drawing a blank on it. But it's basically a spoof of all the detective shows. And in one of the shows, they had Ron Howard as a guest star, and he was controlling people's minds, which was how he's getting people to watch his movies. And these two detectives figure out by, you know, putting together tinfoil helmets that they could avoid Ron Howard's mind control. So,
well, I'm going to tell her that right now.
There you go.
They only help with Ron Howard mind control.
There you go.
So we are talking about the UFOs. UFOs are paranormal, everything like that. Anything that's abnormal is paranormal. So this week's episode, episode 16 of the Paranormal Pulse podcast, we're talking about UFOs. I'm Chris Bruno again, my co-host Lance Phillip, and we were just talking about the 66th anniversary of the Roswell UFO incident. Do you have anything else you want to add about that incident? I mean, we talked about the Google Doodle real quick, too, and that thing's awesome.
Well, you know, the big thing about it is that again, it had sat forgotten about really until 1978, and then since then there have been all kinds of documentaries, movies, and you know more information comes out all the time. But the problem is, there's a lot of contradictory information out there.
Yeah.
And of course, the military won't acknowledge it. You know.
No, of course not.
You know.
Then they'd have to admit that they were lying to people if it is true.
Right, you know, and
as if we don't have problems with trust with them already.
Right, I mean, you know, and then people who claim that, you know, there are people who claim that the alien bodies were taken away, and then of course the government talks about how they were doing tests in the area, using basically crash test dummies dropped from a plane, and for the people who said they saw the alien bodies, you know, that's their explanation. So. You know, it's a lot of information and disinformation out there and stuff that's simply just not plausible, you know, implausible. And at the same time, it's, you know, one of the most famous cases, and it's really one, it's fascinating. There's a ton of reading material out there on the case, you know.
Yeah.
Which does bring me to something else, which we'll talk about right after we take a little break, and that's some of the UFO books that I've read recently.
Ooh, yeah, I want to hear about that. All right, we'll be right back.
Just relax. We are now checking your paranormal pulse.
Welcome back to the Paranormal Pulse podcast. I'm Chris Bruno. That's Lance Phillip. I know you can't see him, but you'll hear him in about 2 seconds. He's going to start telling us about some of these books that he's read about our topic tonight. We're talking about UFOs in the basking in the glory of the 66th anniversary of the Roswell UFO incident. So, Lance, I know nothing about these books. What books are we talking about here? I know you're like a bookworm and a half. You beat me in anything. I can't even fathom reading as much as you do. Well, I would love to, but it just doesn't happen. So we are relying on you. What's going on? What books did you read?
Well, there were 4 books. You know, EKG really were striving to become a true paranormal investigative team beyond ghosts. We're thinking Bigfoot. We're thinking UFOs. So the one thing I knew the least about was how to hunt UFOs, you know? So I picked up several books. Not several. I picked up 4 that... I picked them up dirt cheap on eBay, and the first book that I picked up was The UFO Investigator's Handbook by Mark Gassione. It's printed in England, and this one was actually in the young adult category, but it basically...
It looked fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's a quick book. It's a short book. About 130 pages, and... You know,
it's got a pretty little alien on the top of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thing about it is, it does explain, give you good basic information on UFOs and UFO hunting. And what it does, though, since it was aimed towards young adults, it ties it into movies that we've seen over the years, you know. Like Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Men in Black, X-Files, and stuff like that. And shows you
how
those things...
So it's relatable in that respect.
Right. But it does have a lot of good information. Now, keep in mind, a lot of the cases they cite in here, some of the major U.S. cases, but a lot of the cases they cite in here are from England, because the book was written in England.
Gotcha.
But it does have a lot of good information, and it's a good,
I have
know,
the summary
read.
Here I can read if you'd like.
Sure.
It says, it's the UFO Investigator's Handbook by, how do you pronounce his last name? Gassion?
Guess you know, that's the
way
I'm
going
with
French.
It.
French. His name is Mark. And I'm looking at it on Amazon, actually, right now. It's not expensive at all. So if you're interested, you can go through a link on our Facebook page. We'll give you some info. It's a guide for any reader who wants to form their own UFO investigation unit. It covers a range of UFO topics, describes the events as they were reported, and then looks at possible explanations. So they're trying to debunk it right away, which is good.
Right.
Because what you have left that you can't explain away is paranormal. The emphasis is on discovering the truth by highlighting techniques. It aims to help readers distinguish between the real-life unexplained incidents and hoaxes, which is good. That's exactly what we're looking for. Any investigator, that's what you're supposed to be doing. The subjects included are the Roswell incident that we're talking about tonight, UFOs in history, close encounters, satellites, natural occurrences, and weather anomalies, which are often mistaken for some sort of UFO. So, very cool book. All right, so tell us, what did you think about the book? Did you learn anything?
Yeah, I
know you're saying it's like a young person,
interesting. It's a very easy read, has a lot of information. I recommend it, you know, if people just getting started into it who don't want to go too hot and heavy into it, that's a nice introduction.
Okay.
Then the second book I had is The Field Guide to UFOs by Dennis Stacey and Patrick Hugh. This is a same type of thing. It's a bigger book. This isn't young adult book, but what this one does is take all the famous UFO cases from all around the world, and it gives you, you know, the theory behind it, then the skeptic's view. If they have a solution, it'll give it to you. If they don't, it'll tell you the skeptics don't have a solution for it. And what it does, it gives you an illustrated drawing of what each UFO from each event looked like, tells you all about the event, the witnesses and whatnot. and just gives you a good rundown. So it's got a lot of nice information in here. Explains, again, the different classifications of UFOs by the people who classify these things. And it's a good book. It's, you know, nice.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's like I said, 150 pages or so.
People have reported seeing over the past half century or so. Eyewitnesses around the world actually describe a bewildering array of forms in flight. That's a well-written, descriptive, interesting book already.
Yeah, no, it's a good book. I enjoyed reading that one. Then I read a quick little book on my Kindle, and it's a very short book. It's maybe 20 or 30 pages at most.
It's like a pamphlet.
Yeah, if it were in real book form. It's a short book. It's How to Find a UFO on Purpose by Jay Jamu.
Was this a college project?
No, it's a self-published book by someone who had some, I want to say, some interesting ideas, to say the least. But basically, this guy's theory is that UFOs and aliens are all around us, and that we have a tendency as people to not look up in the sky all that much.
Yeah.
And that if we spent more time looking up in the sky, we would notice a lot more going on than we actually think of.
Yeah. I agree with that. I think we all just look at our feet and look at where we're going and don't look up or look around. Mm-hmm. You know, stop and smell the roses theory.
Absolutely. you know, it's not like he has crackpot theories or anything, but there are some things in here about cow mutilations and things like that, you know, to me take more from the, I guess more of the fanciful side of UFOs and maybe stuff more that you'd see in the movies than maybe real life.
Right.
Although there have been many claims like this in real life, but, you know, but I just think the overall idea of the, you know, like I said, it's a short little book. You know, it was like a dollar download or something like that. It was inexpensive, you know, but I was like, all right, let me take a look at it. You know, it could be interesting.
Could do that.
And then, you know, it's a quick little read, but then the one I'm actually reading now, I'm almost through the whole book. It's a UFO Hunter's Guide by Brett Luter, okay? And this one is a much more detailed book. This is probably, if you want to start with the little pamphlet, one being kindergarten, the other one moving up to, like, fifth grade, and the other one being high school, this is the college-level book, you know, so to speak, out of the four. Much more detailed. Really starts by explaining, what's a UFO? Let's start there. You know, let's break it down. What exactly is a UFO? What are we thinking of? And it starts with all the different theories, including the skeptics' theories, the, you know, and then it explains that even among UFOologists that there's many different theories, which if you thought there were a lot of theories in ghost hunting and there were disagreements, there's probably more in the UFO field.
I'm sure.
Different theories. Again, people not agreeing, people fighting over evidence. It's basically, you know, it's the same problems that there are in the ghost hunting field. They're same thing in the UFO field, you know. You have people putting out.
I almost feel like there would be more in the UFO field just because there's so much that has not been proven.
And I think
that it's more imagination, speculation. You know,
where
even with ghost hunting, we have more solid evidence and more people with experiences than we do with UFO and UFO abduction. You know, alien abduction.
Right, and if you consider that, you know, when we talk about ghost hunting, more people on this planet have died than have lived. I should say more people have died than are alive currently, you know?
Well, yeah, that goes without saying.
Well, the thing is, your chances of actually coming across a UFO are much less than ever coming across a ghost, in my opinion, you know?
Oh, sure.
So that leads for having less concrete information, you know?
Yep.
Plus, again, you know, the book really goes into a lot of the organizations who will try to keep you quiet if you do investigate UFOs. And, you know,
all the conspiracies and cover-ups.
Well, you know, Men in Black, I mean, we laugh at the goofy movies, but there's a lot of theories about the Men in Black who come and shut up UFO investigators and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
is this why you want to get into it, Lance?
No, that's the scary part of it. You know, if you read some of the accounts of some of the things that happened to some of the investigators, I mean, so many investigators, UFO investigators, wind up going crazy. wind up in mental institutions, wind up disappearing, wind up getting out of the field and never speaking about it again. There's a lot of it. I hate to say it. It seems to be a lot rougher to be a UFO investigator.
I would say so.
Yeah, I mean, so they talk about the different groups that are out there to basically keep people quiet, including government organizations. There are government organizations that were put on the books years ago that are still, if you go through the government's budgets, still being paid, but nobody knows what these government agencies do. Ultra secret type of thing. You know, and let's face it, the governments have a reason to want to keep people quiet. I mean, you know, there could be mass hysteria if we found out UFOs were real and that we weren't the all-powerful, almighty beings that we thought we were. You know what I mean? I mean, think about it. You know, it would
we're so arrogant.
It would also screw up organized religion. So there's a lot of reasons for people wanting to keep people quiet.
Sure, I understand that. Keeps world peace.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but, you know, it talks about the incidents, one of the famous incidents that we had where supposedly one of our pilots flying a P-51 Mustang airplane back in 1947, right after World War II. Well, actually, 1948, I believe it was, a year after the Roswell incident, had flown up supposedly chasing a UFO and was shot down. And, you know, and since then, you know, they've the government's blown it off as, because he was radioing in that he saw a UFO. Those tapes are out there. I mean, that stuff's out there. But, of course, the government said, you know, no, he was following a weather balloon.
They're all weather balloons. It's always, they're just shaped funny.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, this book goes into that, gives you a lot of the incidents out there, and really goes into, like, the whole history behind all the UFO sightings and basically how to investigate. How to question people, how to look for evidence. I mean, so it's a really good in-depth book. And like I said, I'm almost all the way through it.
I find it so interesting that there's so many people active in that field, though, still, even though it's fewer than ghost hunting, without comparing them, there's a lot of people involved in UFO investigation.
And there's a lot of, obviously, the most famous organization is MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, but there are a lot of other... there are a lot of other UFO groups out there.
Yeah, there's a network. I'm just looking here, just out of curiosity. There was one called UFOEvidence.org. There's RealUFOs.net. And I'm, by all means, I am not vouching for any of these websites. I haven't searched into them enough. But just to let you know that they're out there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you have.
There's MUFON. Right. Mutual UFO Network. Beautiful. I want to go...
Yeah, you have
MUFON.com.
You have BUFORA, which is the British UFO Research Association. You have ACUFOS, which is the Australian Center for UFO Studies. You know, there's a lot of different groups. You have CSICOP, which is the Committee for Scientific Investigations of Claims of the Paranormal. You have QFORN, who is the Canadian UFO Research Network.
That's cool.
Yeah, obviously, MUFON, who we mentioned.
By the way, MUFON, I'm looking at their website right now. Again, it's MUFON.com. That's MUFON.com. And they have this cool interactive map so that if you want to join a chapter of MUFON in your area, it shows, of course, the United States, but there's also international chapters in Australia and Belgium and Turkey and South Africa. So, I mean, really, this is not something that's just in Britain where, you know, they have crop circles and UFOs or out in the Southwest in the U.S. It's all over. People believe everywhere.
Well, and the thing is with MUFON, though...
Don't be afraid.
It's not very easy to become a member because they you have to go through, believe it or not, a lot of training and tests to become an official investigator for them.
That's so great, though.
That absolutely is.
There's so much information on their website, though. They've got reasons to join and the history and
absolutely.
My goodness.
And I had actually considered for a while maybe trying to join, but honestly, I wouldn't have the time to do all the study work that's involved, you know?
Yeah, you got to focus on one thing or another.
Yeah, absolutely, you know? So
yeah, there's way too many hobbies out there and things that intrigue us that we want to be involved in that you just can't. We've got to work full time. We're poor people just like you guys.
There you go. All right. So that basically sums up, you know, the little book review. So
yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, we'll take some good books there. Are we putting that up at the Podbean page, Lance?
Yeah, it'll all be there on Podbean. Absolutely.
Awesome. And of course, you know, any pictures or comments or jokes or what have you, you're going to find them at the Paranormal Pulse podcast page right on Facebook.
And
so
there have been...
go like our page, join. It's
absolutely
a good community and it keeps growing. I mean, I have to say, I right now, before we go anywhere, how many we have 1,018 likes currently. We'd love to have that go higher.
Absolutely.
We know that you can get your friends to come in. You know they're interested. Turn them on to the Paranormal Pulse. You won't regret it, and they'll love it.
Yeah,
why not?
Share our page. Right? Absolutely. If you like the show, share our page. We really appreciate it. And just to, you know, to go with a, just to let everybody know, this last week to 2 weeks, there have been a lot of UFO videos captured and put up online, and I've been trying to keep up and put them all on our Facebook page. So some
yeah
of the video,
come
some
like
of the videos,
our page and visit us.
Yeah, and some of the videos are a little bit older. Some are very new. A few of them were only recorded in the last few months, so they're interesting. Check them out.
Absolutely. So coming up, we're going to talk about a couple of things. We've got two more things. One in particular is the 1975 alien abduction of Travis Walton. This is one of the most famous cases in history of alien abduction. We're going to talk about that coming up. And also a very cool little announcement about the show. But that's, again, all coming up when we come back. It's the Paranormal Pulse podcast.
Find the Paranormal Pulse podcast on Facebook under Paranormal Pulse podcast. It's that simple.
Welcome back, everybody. Well,
ooh-hoo,
we're going to talk about someone who I had the pleasure of meeting earlier this year, and that is Travis Walton.
Oh, and you met him. Did you meet him at that convention?
Yes, I did,
convention?
At Phenomenology. I sat through one of his conferences and had the pleasure of going up afterwards and shaking his hand and actually meeting him and asking him some other questions.
How cool.
He's really cool. I mean, I tell you, this is a person that, you know, you hear some of these stories and you shake your head and go, really, you were abducted by aliens? And then, but
yeah,
having met him and having listened to his story, I thoroughly believe it. I he's sincere, and he has so much conviction in what he says. And
it takes guts to come out with something like that and just stick to your guns. It's got to be true. Who mm-hmm would be stupid enough to stick to a story that's not true for this long amount of time?
Right. And, you know, he's taken lie detector tests and passed them. And, you know,
yeah,
witnesses.
It's a scary thing to even come out and admit that.
Mm-hmm. And the other people who were there have come out to support him. And basically what had happened was he was a lumberjack. And him and some of his buddies were done work. And they were driving this big truck that they used to use to get from the job site back to the base camp when this UFO appeared. For whatever reason, Travis Walton jumped out of the truck and ran towards it. And apparently there was a light that had come down, knocked him backwards, and then pulled him up into the spaceship.
Wow.
He was taken away where I guess when he had awakened, he was surrounded by aliens who were doing tests on him. And eventually they returned him to Earth. I forget what the time frame was on it, but he was returned. There was a search done. There was lots of publicity. But he was returned. Yeah, he was returned. I forget how many days it was, but it wasn't that much after. Let me just check the date on that. I have it here on the
sure
computer. You know, it's the joy of it. He was returned 5 days later.
Okay.
Okay. Where he was brought back to Earth, and he was returned in. This all took place in Arizona, by the way. So,
oh, in the Apache Sitgreaves National Forest.
Right, right.
All right.
Now, when you meet Travis Walton and he tells you the story, it's really amazing. You know, he basically will answer anything. He doesn't hold back anything. But what he did was he talked about the movie that was made. And that was made in 1992 with D.B. Sweeney starring as Travis Walton. And he talked about the movie and how they took a lot of liberties in the movie. And in fact, they changed some of the characters. They left characters out. There were actually two more guys that were in the truck that were left out of the movie totally.
See, and that changes all of the information that he's giving you in his, you know, account of the whole thing.
Right.
You leave certain pieces out, it changes the story, basically.
And what they
it's good for movies.
Right. And what he said was they did the Hollywood version of it, and they embellished in places and changed the story around, changed the events a little bit. But it is a good, you know, it's a good movie, and a lot of UFOologists really are into the movie. But he does talk about how he was disappointed with certain, looking back on it, he was disappointed in certain things that they changed. Well, just recently, the show on Sci-Fi, Paranormal Witness, did a reenactment of it. And he had a lot more control over it and kept it pretty much to, well, he said he basically had full control over it with them, and that the story that you see on Paranormal Witness is the story, as opposed to what you saw in the movie.
And that's interesting.
And that just aired this season, and you can actually watch it on Sci-Fi's website. And
oh, cool.
We'll put up a link to that so you can watch it. It's a 1-hour episode. And, you know, it's a great story. He talks, you know, he talked about, because like, one of the things I was interested in, like, what the hell were the aliens like? And, you know, he describes them. They're not the typical grays that we see drawn everywhere. He said they were more human-like, but with very big eyes. He remembered they were very big eyes, and he said it was the eyes that really, to him, stood out more than anything. And he's, you know, at one point he talks about how he jumped up off a table, he grabbed some type of instrument, was swinging it at them. The thing I would have liked to have gotten to hear more of, because when I saw him and he spoke to the conference, he spoke a lot about being abducted and the events that led up to it. And then a lot about what happened since, stuff with the FBI, stuff with the polygraphs, him going on certain TV shows. But he didn't really talk as much as I would like to and explain what he saw on the ship. And if I get to meet him again, I think I will, because I think he's going to be at the Paracon, in which case I want to talk to him again, and I really want to ask him some questions, because I guess that day I was still fascinated by some other things, but I want to know more about what happened on the ship. What did it look like? I want to know more about what the aliens were. He did say they were in, if I remember right, that they were in red uniforms, which I found interesting.
Hmm.
But he was a really nice guy, and I really did believe after talking to him, you know, hearing him speak and getting to ask him a couple of questions, that everything he had to say was true, you know? And the thing is, he's made money off of this over the years, but he's also had to live with a lot of stress because of it, you know?
Oh, I'm
still,
sure.
Still talks about having nightmares. It took years to come to grips with it. You know, he did his...
Just take away the fact that, you know, he had to deal with the abduction itself. If you believe him, take that whole piece away from it. Just from what he said, the whole public, there, he's got his supporters, but most people are just like, oh my God. And then now they don't want to give him a job, or they don't want it. You know what I mean?
Right. And, you know,
society starts fighting against him because mm-hmm. he's standing up by himself.
Right.
Saying something.
And then, you know, he
that's a lot of stress.
No, and obviously, and he had to deal with the authorities who, you know, all of a sudden he's gone. They do this big manhunt. They can't find him. His friends sit there and tell them, no, he was abducted. That, you know, the police and everything think that they're crazy. And then all of a sudden he shows up again. So, you know, there are people who would have thought it was a hoax and that sort of thing. And he's had to stand up. And he's had to stand up for all these years. You know, you're talking about since 1975, he's had to get up there and, you know, really fight for, you know, his story and tell his story and have conviction with it, you know, and reinforce it. And he had to go through a lot, you know. It was fascinating, everything he went through after the fact. The fact that when he came back, he was very weak, and they had to get him back to health. And the fact that his brother Dan was really the guy who supported him, you know. And when he was talking about how afterwards, you know, when he wasn't working and this, that, the other thing, he, you know, his brother was the one who had to step up and support him and take care of him and that sort of thing. And that, you know, he's written several books, And he's been on, obviously, all kinds of TV shows, Larry King and whatnot. And
sure. You know,
there's a lot of footage on YouTube of him being interviewed. And it's just, it's a fascinating story. It really is. And like I said, I had the pleasure of meeting the man. And, you know, I got to look in his eyes and ask him questions. And there was no doubt in my mind that he's telling the truth. So,
well, that's good. And obviously, a lot of people believe that he is telling the truth. Otherwise, he wouldn't still be around, you know, telling his story. We were just talking about Travis Walton. He was the American logger who claimed to have been abducted by a UFO on November 5th in 1975 while working out in the Apache Sitgreaves National Forest in Arizona. Lots of information on this. Obviously, movies, documentaries, as we were just discussing that. You can find all the details about this on our Podbean page. What's the address for our Podbean page? Or do you just go to Podbean and search us?
It's Podbean.com/ParanormalPulse.
Oh, that's easy enough.
Yeah.
You can also find us on Facebook at the Paranormal Pulse Podcast. Make sure you like us. Bring your friends along. Like, have them like us too. Spread the love.
Absolutely.
And we have something, obviously, my browser is now crapping out on me, but you can find us also on Roku, on iTunes, on Blueberry, on
Stitcher.
Obviously, Podbean. You can listen to the podcast right off the Facebook page. The Paranormal Pulse Podcast, again, is the Facebook page. And now I just found this out, and I'm going to leave Lance to tell everybody, but they're kind of cool.
Hey, this is Grant Wilson of Ghost Hunters, and you're listening to the Paranormal Pulse.
Well, for the longest time, obviously, for us iPhone users, all you had to do was open up our website page, the Podbean page, and you could just click Add It to Your Home Screen, and it would automatically add the mobile page to your home screen and create an icon for it, so it actually creates an app.
You could just sit there and listen to it right from your phone.
Well, yeah, it actually brings up the mobile website, so you can listen to all different episodes, you know, with the artwork and whatnot. And that's something that that is one thing that the iPhone has that other phones don't have, where you can just go to any website and you can make it an app. Well, since that feature isn't included on Android, and I don't want to leave our Android friends out because we have a lot of friends who use Android.
I'll get mad.
Well, exactly. And so April, you know. My buddy April, I tease her so much about the Android and iPhone debate. But okay.
That's a whole other show, Lance.
Yeah, I know. But for the people who use Android, we do have an Android app that will be launched probably within about 2 weeks from the show's airing. It's in development right now. We're just testing it and making sure it all works, and we'll get it out there. As soon as it's available, we'll let everybody know, and you'll be able to get the Android app.
So just to make that clear, it's an Android app for the Paranormal Pulse Podcast. That stuff's exciting. I should just be swearing because it's a podcast, but that's really exciting.
Absolutely. With that, you won't have to worry about downloading the episodes. It automatically will update on your phone when the episodes update, and you'll just be able to go in there, and it'll show you all the episodes, and you can click on each one. So if you're new to the show, or if you've only heard a couple episodes, you want to go back and listen to some of the back episodes, you know, things like our interview with Brian Kenno, some of our big interviews.
Gems back there. We're going to work on some more interviews.
But it's great. The app will allow you just to... You won't even have to go to any of the services. You just be able to click on it, open it up, and boom, you'll be ready to listen.
That's exciting.
Yeah, that is. It's a good
one. I can't wait to play with that. 2 weeks.
Oops. If everything goes right, it'll be 2 weeks. You know.
What are you breaking over there?
I'm hitting the mixing console. It's okay. You know.
Just don't drop it. We'll be okay.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
You know, I think we've done really well. If you want to contact us, hey, we would love to bring back the listener questions. You can contact us and post a question on the Paranormal Pulse Podcast page right on Facebook. Make a comment on one of our statuses. We don't care. Email us. It's all good. We'd love to hear from you. And if you'd love to hear yourself.
Absolutely. That's where I was going. You could call us and leave a message for us asking a question. You know, call up, say, hey, I'm Joe Schmo from, you know, someplace out somewhere.
Roswell.
And this is Roswell, and this is my question. And we'll get it on the air. And you can do that by dialing 805-633-0935. And you can leave a message. You'll hear a message saying it's Google Voice. Just leave your message after that. We'll take your question, we'll put it on the air, and we'll answer it. And again, that number is 805-633-0935. And just one more bit of good news before we close out the show.
Another surprise for me, too.
Well, this is for the people who, you know, we had Grant Wilson on the show, and he had his Kickstarter campaign to launch his new game. Well, that was successful. And I actually received an email stating that for the people who contributed, who are contributed to a level where they're getting the game, well, the game is actually ahead of schedule in production. So instead of being mailed out in August, they're going to be mailed out sometime before the end of July. So we should be we should be getting our game soon. So I'm looking forward
to that.
Yeah, I have one coming my way. So I'm looking forward to it. So, you know, I sent Grant the message saying that, you know, I hope our show had just a little bit of a contribution to getting that project successfully funded. So
I'm sure it did.
Absolutely.
We're awesome, right?
Absolutely. And on that note, folks, we're going to be signing off. And until we talk to you again, hang in there and enjoy.
I'm Chris Bruto. I'm leaving. That was Lance Phillip. Thanks for listening to the Paranormal Pulse podcast.
Goodbye, everybody.
The Paranormal Pulse. Like us on Facebook at East Coast Ghost. That's East Coast with a K. Ghost on Facebook. And feel it for yourself.